Hi, I'm Marion McPartlin. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Denny Seitlin, a pianist with extraordinary technique and unusual insights into harmonic beauty. His playing is strong, yet sensitive, simple, yet complex. So be prepared for a few surprises. Denny, how are you?
I'm fine, Marion. It's such a pleasure to be back with you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. My goodness. And in the midst of your busy life, I mean, I didn't mention in introducing you that you've sort of got a double life, I mean, as a jazz pianist and as a psychiatrist. It's the most intriguing thing I ever knew about you. How did that start?
It started when I was very, very young. I had both medicine and music in my family on both sides. My mom was my first piano teacher and a speech pathologist. My father played by ear, even though he didn't know how to read music. And he was an X-ray doctor, a radiologist. So they encouraged me in both fields since I was a tiny tot. And I always had a sense I was going to be involved in both fields in some way. I didn't know exactly what shape it would take. I started practicing psychotherapy without a license in the playground when I was in second and third grade.
Oh,
my uncle was a psychiatrist and had talked about his work, and it had fascinated me. And I just found myself listening to kids, and they came up and talked with me. And I started playing piano when I was about 3 years old, hopping up on the lap of whichever parent was playing the instrument and going along for the ride, putting my little hands on their hands and moving kinesthetically back and forth on the keyboard, and then
How
I started
cute.
Picking up my own little melodies. And so I've been at it for a while.
Well, were you ever at a point where, being a doctor, shall we say, did you ever feel that you were going to, that was going to take over from the piano, or have you managed to keep them sort of equal?
I've kept them equal in my own mind and in my own heart. I mean, there's certainly, in terms of hours per week, I spend more time as a psychiatrist. But I feel that in terms of my spirit, they're 50-50, and they've always been. I never had a feeling I had to choose one over the other. Again, I have to thank my parents for not putting it to me that way. They always encouraged me, well, why, you know, you love both these things. Why can't you do both these things? And I felt that I could. And so I've just become, I think, a good juggler of time and schedules and priorities. And I think I have managed to find what the heart of each field is for me.
I think it's fascinating that a jazz musician is a psychiatrist. I mean, I feel as if that being a jazz musician would bring an extra dimension to your psychiatric work. I don't know why I think that.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, in many ways, the fields are very parallel. They both involve communication with a capital C.
Absolutely.
And they both require the ability to listen and interact in a spontaneous way.
That's true.
And to really tune into the other person, whether it's a musician in a studio or what we're going to be attempting to do together today, or whether I'm in my office and trying to really understand the nature of the psychological life of the person in that room with me and trying to tune into to him or her and to have some sort of flow going back and forth.
Oh, it's fascinating.
It's very parallel.
Fascinating to me. But, you know, there's so many things that you and I can talk about, and I'm dying to get into some of that. But first of all, I'd just love to hear you play something. So what can it be?
Well, I'd like to do an old standard, Body and Soul.
That's one of my all-time favorites.
Thank you.
You know, what I love about that body and soul, I mean, you started it out in what I guess is the original key, D flat.
Mm-hmm.
And but you go to so many other places, and I think you ended it in G.
That's right, yeah.
But do you kind of let it happen, or do you ever work some of it out in front?
Well, the basic reharmonization of that piece is something that I have sort of evolved into, so I tend to use that as my basic springboard for the improvisation, although sometimes I don't do the modulation in the G at the end. It felt like doing that today. And,
but the first few notes, would you just play those first few notes for me, chords and everything? Ooh. Yeah, see, that's... Oh, that's beautiful.
Thank you.
And it doesn't. The thing is, it doesn't take away from the tune.
Well, I hope not. That's the problem I have with some people who reharmonize pieces, that it gets almost, at its worst, an exercise of how clever can I be of changing stuff, and it just vitiates the whole original
tune.
And I don't want to do that.
No, well, you're not doing it. And you come up with so many surprises and so many different kinds of tunes that I'm going to be very interested in hearing this one. Cascade, is that the name of
it? It's Cascade, and it does go through a number of different feelings and shapes and approaches. So I'll take a crack at it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Paul, you must really have to put in your time practicing to have the technique for a piece like that. I mean, that's got a lot of different stuff in it.
It does have a lot of things in it. I'm always wishing I could spend more time at the keyboard, but I do try to get to the piano every day.
Well, now, when did you write that?
That piece, actually, I wrote a while back. I don't remember exactly when. I've never actually put it on record yet. One of these days, I think it'll be on a CD.
It's a very dramatic piece. Has it got some kind of message or idea of something that you were working out at the piano?
I don't recall that there was a particular programmatic idea to it. I think that the title occurred to me sometime later. I don't know about you, but I often have trouble coming up with titles for my own compositions. And Josephine, my wife, has often been helpful in coming up with things. I'm not even sure how the title Cascade got imprinted onto this piece.
Well, it certainly, it's well titled, and I mean, it's... Gee, I tell you what, I'd hate to see that thing written down.
I'd hate to have to write it down.
It's never been written down.
No.
Boy, I would really hate that. Well, you play so many tunes. I mean, when you were a kid, did you just learn them sort of by osmosis?
Or? Yes, exactly the word. I think that's the descriptive phrase of my whole jazz education. It was osmotic learning, just going and hanging out at sessions and playing and getting somebody to show me how they voiced this and voiced that and woodshedding. There were no jazz schools back then. I started to play jazz in the 50s when I was in high school. Fortunately, there was a tremendous amount of ferment in Chicago going on at those times and great sessions that went on all night. And I would just stay out and South side of Chicago till 5 in the morning playing.
Oh, such a wonderful town. I lived there. Actually, Jimmy and I probably had just left Chicago in about 1949 and came to New York.
Uh-huh.
But I do remember a lot of what was going on in the town, and it was a wonderful place to live. Well, we're going to have more music in a moment, but first I should let our listeners know that my guest is Denny Zeitlin. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. I'm wondering how you got into all these Ornette Coleman pieces. I mean, he's not exactly run-of-the-mill.
No, indeed not, but I was fascinated with what he was doing from the beginning. I've always been drawn to 20th century music and dissonance and unusual shapes and asymmetries in music, and here was this guy who had a wonderful bent for composing and playing that just obliterated bar lines right and left in a very delicious way. So I loved his music and started playing his pieces. And then Charlie Hayden, who was a member of Ornette's original quartet, did some recordings with me for Columbia back in the mid-60s, and even subsequent we did a duet album in the early 80s. And so he's taught me some of these Ornette tunes over the years, and particularly this blues turnaround that I've recorded, and I know you've recorded.
Yes.
is a great blues riff of Ornette's.
Well, let's have at it. Do you want to start it out and some kind of intro, maybe, or do you want to start right on it?
Let's start right on. You know. Thank you.
You know, a thing like that is really fun to do because, I mean, you can make it like a blues or you can take it out. And,
yeah.
And are you familiar with Paul Blay?
Yeah, sure. I love Paul's playing.
It's funny. I don't know why this reminded me of him, but when I was green and callow in the Hickory House, he was pretty young, I guess, and he used to come in and sit in with the trio. And I could never figure it out. Like, he'd be playing a B-flat blues, but he'd play most of it in A.
Yeah, we were playing a lot of upper interval stuff in that last duet, which was fun because we were keeping the 12-bar structure, but we sure were bending it and pushing it.
So I don't know. Fun. I was sort of thinking of that. I guess I now have become free enough that I can do that thing. I guess the secret, though, is to know where you are. You know, if you can't lose your place in the tune, or unless you decide to.
That could be delicious too, right?
You'd say, well, I'm going to get way outside and forget all about the structure, and then you come back later. But mm-hmm. That's really fun to do. I enjoyed that very much. Are you still, like, writing new pieces?
Yeah.
How often do you?
Oh, it seems like I've always got a composition of some kind in the works. You know that sometimes they're orphans for a while. I'll get them started, and they're in orbit. They're looking for their final home, and sometimes it takes months, even years, for the tune to finally alight. But I have these fragments that are on tape, and then sometimes they're a little file of ideas, and every now and then some of them start to coalesce into a piece. And,
I do the same thing, or even like in taxi cabs or things, but I'm picturing you sitting in the chair and dealing with a patient, and suddenly an idea pops into your head, and I'm thinking to myself, well, can he let go of his thought for a moment to get a pencil and surreptitiously write that down?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm relieved to know that. But anyway, I guess I get my ideas just as you do, and sometimes they take forever, but to get them down. But I did a recording of tunes by Mary Lou Williams.
Oh, yeah, I have that CD. I love that CD.
In fact, have that?
In fact, your composition, Threnody, I think is a haunting piece from that album. Would you be into doing that one? If you're not tired of playing it, I would love to hear
no,
that.
No, I'd love to do that. I just thought, well, I'm going to stick in one of my own things just as a kind of tribute to Mary Lou. I love that word. I mean, it's kind of an offbeat word for melancholia or sadness.
Or lament.
Lamentation. Whatever I was talking about. But anyway, it fits. All right, here goes.
Thank you.
Marion, that was gorgeous. I mean, I love the piece, but that rendition was so heartfelt. And you're always pushing the envelope. I mean, that's something about you that's been true all the years I've been following your music. You're always pushing, and it's just, it's wonderful to hear.
Well, thank you. I think hearing you had a little influence on maybe making the piece a little different. I mean, it's, I didn't actually know what I was going to do, and I guess you don't either,
no,
some of the things you're doing.
That's the fun of this, isn't it?
Isn't that fun? I mean, I guess that's why this kind of music is more fun than playing something off the printed page, that you have to do the way it says.
Yes.
We don't have to do anything except, except the way we want to do it.
Right.
But in the meantime, I should let our listeners know that my guest is Denny Zeitlin. I'm Marion McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, which is made possible in part by the Baldwin Piano Company. Here's another kind of a tune which I would love to hear what you would play on this. Jerome Kern, All the Things You Are. Now,
another great old standard.
But it's funny. I mean, there have been so many renditions of this thing. In fact, I play it a lot, but I do a sort of showbiz thing where I do a little fugue and stuff like that, which actually I stole a million years ago from Johnny Guarneri.
Uh-huh.
I heard him do that. And, you know, I thought, gee, that would be fun to do.
But I remember I used to do an arrangement of it where I would go into waltz time on the bridge for six bars and then four bars of 4-4 at the end. Or, I mean, there's so many things you could do with this, too. You know?
Well, I'm real excited about wondering what you're going to do with it because...
Well, what we're going to do with it.
Well, all right, but what I will do with it will probably have a lot to do with hearing what you're doing with it. So, first of all, are we going to do it in the original key?
Yeah, let's do that. I guess it's in A flat.
Or anywhere you want to do it. I don't care.
Let's do it. Let's do it in A flat.
All right.
How should we start this thing? What kind of tempo do you want to do on it?
Well, do you want to do a little ad lib bit and then go into tempo, and I'll go wherever you go?
Okay. All right. Okay. Okay. We'll try that.
funny, in spite of the sort of different things we're doing, I mostly find it easy playing with you.
Me too. Me too. I mean, I've played with other pianists that are, you know, you feel that there's quite a bridge that has to be made, and more effort, but it really feels just so easy. It's such fun playing with you.
It's that thing about listening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fantastic. You know, I went to ask you, are you ever able to sort of mix up your careers or do a piano recital for the patients or something like that, or the hospital?
I actually did that when I was in high school. I had a group that used to tour around the Chicago area playing music in mental hospitals. But these days, the only time I find myself wearing both hats is I do a lecture demonstration on the psychology of improvisation.
I
talk about the psychological issues and then try to demonstrate them on the piano. And that's fun. It's an interesting challenge for me to do that.
Boy, I would like to be a fly on the wall hearing that sometime. Fascinating. Do you ever have people play, or do you just play and talk?
Well, it's usually that I do the playing and the talking in that presentation, although sometimes when I do clinics at different music schools, you know, there are people playing and I'm commenting. But I try, in terms of the psychological issues, to give people, and often they're lay audiences, they're people who haven't ever had the experience of improvising at anything, to give them an idea of what that psychological terrain is about and what are some of the obstacles that people typically experience when they try to let themselves go. We were talking about the joy of playing music that has no notes. Well, it's joy for us, but it's terror for a lot of people who want to have that page there with every note written so they'll know if they've played this note that this is the right note, quote unquote. And like a lot of classical musicians, when they try to play jazz, they experience this kind of terror.
Really, they do. I've had somebody do that when I've said, just put your hands down and play something that's not on the page. Just play anything. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, no, I can't. No.
Yeah.
Why is that?
So, I mean, that's part of the issue that I deal with in this talk is people, how hung up we can get on issues of right and wrong and what it's like to lose control. Very often people fear losing control to get into this kind of music or to improvise at dance or in acting, and that they'll either make a fool out of themselves or they may have a psychotic break or they have some catastrophic idea of what might befall them if they let themselves do this. And so I talk about those issues. And sometimes people, they have an intense fear of failure that gets in their way of playing. Sometimes people feel very guilty about success.
That's amazing.
So that the idea of getting up there and doing a good job makes them feel very guilty. Maybe perhaps somebody in their family who was never able to play music and had a horribly difficult life, they would feel it isn't fair for them to be out on the stage and shining when they had a brother who spent most of his life in a hospital.
Boy, that's
so they
amazing.
Tend to take the air out of their own souffle and just and either play poorly or don't play at all or inhibit themselves in some
isn't
way.
Isn't that a shame? And but I hope they can get over that to get a better sense of how grateful one should be to be able to play and think well of yourself. I don't know. I guess I've dealt with some of these things myself, but not at the moment.
It's interesting. The word gratitude is often the word that helps people more than anything else get out of these sorts of preoccupations. Just being grateful for the opportunity and the ability to be with music, to play music and to be with the music. And if you can really get into that frame of mind, often a lot of these other concerns tend to drift into the background.
Well, that's good, because I mean, I have to think about that in so many ways, not only music, but just being grateful for, like, having your health and strength and
yes.
able to do things. And,
truly.
And that does sort of make other things fade away. It's true. It's very... Well, we're not going to fade away.
What are we going to play?
You're going to play.
I'm going to play.
You're going to play ESP.
Yeah, I love this piece. I've been a big fan of Wayne Shorter's writing and playing for years.
Oh, me too.
Every tune he writes has something unusual about it and almost instantly identifiable as a Wayne Shorter tune.
Yes.
And yet it's not a cliche. It's just that there's something fresh about everything he does. And this tune, I think, is a wonderful challenge to play on. It was the title tune of perhaps the last... No, it wasn't the last of Miles Davis Quintet album of the 60s. It was sort of somewhere in the middle 60s period that they did an album that was called ESP. But I'll play his tune now.
Great. I've got that Miles Davis record on an LP, but now I'm hearing the tune more clearly. I think when Miles and the guys did it, I never could quite catch on to the melody.
Uh-huh.
We've got a lot more music to come, but right now I'd like to remind you that my guest is Denny Zeitlin. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz, which is made possible in part by Borders Books and Music, celebrating the arts by supporting cultural programming on NPR. We're due to do another duet.
Let's
do
one.
What do you think about that?
Let's do one.
Okay. All right. Suggest something.
Well, let's do another old standard. Let's see, before the show began, we were kicking around some possibilities. I guess the one I'm most drawn to right now, if you're up for it, would be Gone with the Wind.
Oh, I love that tune. Love
Should
that
we do,
tune.
Do that one
let's
in,
do
e,
that.
In E flat? And what kind of a tempo would you like on that?
Why don't you set the tempo?
Okay.
Thank you. You know, that Gone with the Wind is a real favorite of mine, and I think that's the perfect tempo, like a nice...
It's very relaxed, wasn't it? You can kind of sink into it.
You know? Very relaxed. Yeah. You know, this is a drag, Jenny. We're at the end of the show. We don't have too much more time.
Mm.
And it's a shame because I really love having you here and talking
thanks.
To you.
It's great to hang out. I wish we could do three of these.
Oh, yeah, me
Let's
too.
Let's do a triple.
Me too. But just tell me, what are your future plans besides your... regular patients to have some gigs
basically coming up. My hope is just to keep music and medicine alive and in me and to just keep feeling that I'm growing and evolving. That's the wonderful thing about being a psychiatrist and doing psychotherapy. It never gets old.
No.
It is always, the material's always new. You're working with people who are moving and changing and this music keeps moving and changing.
That's
and I just
want
to feel I'm a part of it in some way and can keep evolving.
Boy, you are. You've sort of got the best of both worlds, too, it seems to me. So, shall we wind up with some, like a sort of up-tempo tune?
Do a bebop thing.
A bebop tune. I thought of one. By Tad Dameron. How about Lady Bird?
Oh, that'd be fun. That'd be fun. I haven't done that in a while, but that's a tune I remember playing a lot years ago.
Well,
it'd be fun to do that with you.
Let's do that.
Okay.
That was a good one. I like that a lot.
That was fun.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland. Her guest has been Denny Zeitlin. This program originally aired in the year 2000. Join us each week at this time as Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and friends brings you outstanding artists for conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is recorded at Manhattan Beat Studios in New York and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson. Recording engineer, Richard Applegate. Mastering engineer, David Mitchell. Production manager, Audrey Shiflett. The executive producer is Tom Clark. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To find out more about the artists and music selections heard on Piano Jazz, or to listen to a recent program, visit our website, pianojazz.npr.org. Major support for this edition of Piano Jazz comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people make the arts and culture an active part of their everyday lives. Additional support comes from the Friends of Piano Jazz. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. This is NPR.